What I want to focus in on is the Makkah of Arov, the Makkah of the wild beasts. So if you have a Chumash, you can take a look. It's in chapter 8, verses 18 and 19, is the Makkah of the Arov, which is the wild beasts. It's a machlokas, actually. It's a machlokas in the Medrash, whether or not this Makkah, this plague, was actually wild beasts or gnats and hornets and different things. That's the opinion of Nehemiah. We hold, most commentators go with the opinion of Yehuda, it's wild beasts. That's what everyone's familiar with. But it's just interesting that you have this opinion of Nehemiah, that it was hornets and gnats. These psukim over here are describing the warning that Moshe gave to Paro about the impending Makkah of wild beasts. So you look closely at the psukim, verse 18 says, and this is what Hashem is telling Moshe to tell Paro. He says to him, tell him that Hiflesi Bayamahu as Eretz Goshen, I'm going to separate on that day the land of Goshen. Land of Goshen is where the Jewish people are living. That's the primary residence. The land of Goshen, She'ami Omed Olah, where the Jewish people are standing there. Levilti Hayosham Arov, in order that the Arov shall not strike anyone in Goshen. So this pasuk is saying that there's going to be a distinction made for the Jewish people. A distinction is made for the Jewish people. They're not going to be affected. They're going to be completely immune to this Makkah, not having nothing to do with it. Now, other Makkos, they were experiencing, or they saw it, they were privy to it because it was all around them, the dam of the blood, even though it didn't affect them. But they saw it. They were their own eyes. But the Makkah of Arov never went into Goshen, which is really a miraculous phenomenon. The wild beasts, they came from different lands. The Ramban says that the animals came from different places, other countries, other places. They came swarming in into this area, but they didn't go into Goshen whatsoever. So in this respect, so Goshen was separated. Hiflesi b'yomahu, they'll be distinct on that day. Land of Goshen, Jewish people will not be affected, will be immune to this Makkah of Arov, l'manteidukya ne'ashem Hashem b'kerev ha'aretz, in order that you shall know, and he's speaking to Paro, you should know that Hashem is in the midst of the land. And then verse 19 says, v'samti pedus bein ami u'bein amecha, I will make, what's the translation? I'll make a distinction. A distinction. What was the translation in the previous verse? Beginning of 18. Beginning of verse 18. What was the translation they used?
Set apart.
So very similar. I mean, they translate Hiflesia, setting apart. In the second pasuk, Samti Pedus, I'm going to make a distinction for my people, Bein Amecha, and your people. L'mocha Yehus is that tomorrow is going to be the sign. You're going to see this Makkah tomorrow. And the obvious question is what's the repetition? What's the repetition? We already said in verse 18 there's going to be a separation, there's going to be a distinction. The Jewish people are going to be immune to it. So what's the repetition of a samte pedus? I'm now going to make a distinction or a separation. And they're different words in Hebrew completely. In Hebrew, the verse 18 is hiflesi. Hiflesi comes from the word pela, which means wonderment or miracle. In the second verse, it says pedus, which is from an expression of pidgin, of redemption. So the interesting words to describe this distinction, the question is, what's the repetition? So the Ramban does say, he says that the first pasuk is referring to this wonderment, this pella, this miracle of the fact that the wild beast did not go into Goshen. They didn't go into Goshen at all, even though, see, other Makkos were all localized, and these were they came locally. Here they're coming from elsewhere, so you'd expect them to go into anywhere where they'd be running everywhere and everywhere, and they would go into Goshen. So the miracle was they didn't go into Goshen. So that's the miracle of the first one. The second pasuk, Ramban says, he says that the meaning of pedus is V'samti pedus bein ami bein amech. I'm going to make a distinction between my people and you. Shafilu be'eretz Mitzrayim, even in Mitzrayim itself, Mitzrayim proper, im yinsu hachayos ish Yehudi le'yazikuhu. It was let's say a Jew is inside Mitzrayim proper, not in Goshen. So even there, the Jews will not be affected by this Makkah. by this plague by the wild beast. So the second pasuk is the immunity of the Jewish people within Mitzrayim, and the first pasuk is the immunity of land of Goshen as a totality. So there are two different words referring to two different manners of the miracle. So in a certain sense, maybe the first one is more miraculous because as the wild beasts are coming in, they're just going directly into Mitzrayim. They're not touching Goshen whatsoever. And then the second one, the second pasuk, is a reference to any Jews who are inside Mitzrayim proper. So as the wild beasts are going, they're not being affected by them, which is also miraculous, but it's used, but the different word is, they're redeemed, pedus, they are redeemed. Mm. They have a pidgin, they have a redemption in Mitzrayim itself. That's the Ramban. Mm. A possible other explanation is based on a Gemara, which says that the slavery of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim ended in Tishrei before they left Mitzrayim. So this, the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, it says that the slavery ended. What does that mean? So first of all, backdrop is that there's a Mishnah in Tractate Edios, and there it says, the Rabbi Akiva says, that goes through different things, different lists of numbers, and it says, the for example, the Mabul, the flood lasted for 12 months. The other things lasted for 12 months. But one of the things he says there is that the plagues lasted over a period of 12 months. So the whole story of these 10 plagues takes place over a 12-month period. Exactly what the arrangement is over the 12-month period, there's a little bit of a debate about that, because obviously there's more than this 10 plagues within 12 months. Exactly what the orientation was over the course of the 12 months. But this is what the Mishnah says, that the plagues lasted 12 months, went over a 12-month period. So approximately 3 or 4 weeks per plague. So if you figure out exactly which plague mapped to which particular month, it's debatable. Different commentaries say different things. But there are some commentaries that say that the plague of Arav, the plague of the wild beasts, right, corresponds to Tishrei. So this plague over here, the fourth plague, took place in the month of Tishrei. And therefore, when the Gemara says that the slavery ended in the month of Tishrei, it means, therefore, that with this plague over here, the slavery of the Jewish people ended with this particular plague. So whereas the plagues continued on to destroy, to wreak havoc in Mitzrayim, but the actual enslavement of the Jewish people already stopped in Tishrei, which corresponds to this particular plague. So Jewish people are really, on their way out already. The slavery is coming to an end. There's already in Tishrei, the slavery, and it stands to reason, Tishrei is meant of Teshuvah and coming back to Hashem. So that's when the actual slavery of the Jewish people in the Mitzrayim really pulled back and stopped the enslavement of the Jewish people in the month of Tishrei. Mm-hmm. And according to some, it corresponds to this plague over here, this plague, the Arav of the wild beasts. So therefore, that could be another explanation as to why the second pasuk says pedus, because the word pedus means redemption. Mm. So the first pasuk is describing the actual phenomena itself, the immunity of the Jewish people from the plague in Goshen. And the second reference of pedus, of redemption, is alluding to the additional dimension of this particular plague, that the enslavement and the slavery of the Jewish people finally came to an end. So there was a real redemption of the Jewish people over here with this plague. So that's the second pasuk. That's the second explanation of the second pasuk. But that's only a segue. That's just our introduction to our deep dive over here, to a little bit more of a spiritual, meaningful, more of a spiritual explanation, something which we can go home with. I mean, you should go home with all of this. I mean, I'm not saying this is not, God forbid, not, but it's all important. It's all very, but the place I want to go to is the Balaturim. The Balaturim is one of the classic commentators. We only use classics over here, right? This is the place of classics. So the Balaturim says in his classic style, and this is before Sepharia, this is before Concordance, this is before dictionaries, this is before anything which is printed. This is in the times when people knew things in their brains, when they memorized things and they retained it inside their brain. The best computer of all, the brain. Unfortunately, the most underused computer perhaps today. But the Balaturim says the following. He said, in commenting on this word pedus, that's our magic word. That's our magic word to remember today, pedus, right? Say pedus, pedus,
pedus,
pedus, which again, simply translated is redemption, distinction. Yeah. So the Baal HaTorah says the word pedus, like we all know, appears three times in the entirety of Tanakh. We all knew that, of course, right?
Really?
But he knew that. He knew that the word pedus appears three times in the entirety of Tanakh. Okay, so it's once over here and two times in Tehillim, two different places in Tehillim.
Wow.
However, the difference between the three of them is in the other two in Tehillim, it's written, and for those who will understand, it's written mole. They're written mole. They're written with an extra vav.
Yeah.
In other words, not with extra vav. In the word pedus is actually properly spelled as pei dalet vav tof. That's the proper pronunciation, proper spelling of it. Mm-hmm. Pei dalet vav tof, pedus, mm-hmm. right? The vav is us, like an u sound. However, over here you'll see that it's spelled without the vav. Mm-hmm. It's spelled pei dalet tof without the vav. I mean, the pronunciation still remains the same because with the vowelation, it still ends up being the same. But this is always noteworthy. Whenever words are missing letters or there are extra letters, this is always a point of discussion. And the Baal HaTorah says that over here, it's written without a vav, and those other two places until it's written with a vav. What's the significance of this? So he says because this pedus, this redemption over here, this redemption of the Makkah of the wild beast, did this mark the ultimate redemption of the Jewish people? No.
Yeah.
It's only the fourth plague. So the final redemption of the Jewish people hasn't yet taken place. So the absence of the Vav alludes to the fact that there's still a missing redemption. The redemption hasn't taken place yet. The other two psukim, the other two verses where the word pedus is written with a Vav, mole, full, are both referring to future redemptions. The first one in Tehillim is referring to the actual full redemption from Mitzrayim. That first pasuk is referring to the redemption of the Jewish people from Mitzrayim when it actually took place. So hence, the word is written full with the extra vav, with the vav itself, because it was complete. The redemption was complete at the end of the actual Exodus. And then the third instance, the second pasuk in Tehillim, if you look at it, it's a prediction or it's a prophecy about the ultimate redemption of the Jewish people in the future. So that certainly deserves the Vav to be there. Those two verses of Tehillim, the word Pedus has the Vav implying or alluding to the completion of the redemption, both in Mitzrayim as well as in the future redemption. But this pasuk over here, since the redemption hasn't yet taken place, so therefore it's alluded to by the missing Vav. Right, everything is all fits together perfectly, like a glove. It's all, you know, everything is designed. It all makes a lot of sense, but we haven't really gotten completely there yet. So, on this, the Chidah says, one of the again classic commentaries, he says that if you look at the verse, it says, I will make a pedus between my people and between your people. And then the verse continues, Lamacha Yehi Yehuzazah. Tomorrow, this sign will be. Tomorrow will be the sign. Now, the word os, sign, I mean, it can also mean what? What else can the word os mean?
Letter.
Letter. So he says, if we're saying that this vav is missing over in the word pedus, if the vav is missing in the word pedus because it's alluding to the deficiency of redemption at this particular point in time, tomorrow lamacha yeah, tomorrow this letter will come back. Tomorrow the letter will be there. The letter is going to come back in the future. It's going to come back in the future. It suddenly came in the future more immediately with the redemption from Mitzrayim, but it's going to come eventually with the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash when the Mashiach comes in the future as well. But where it really comes to light is, and I'm going to have to borrow your chumash over here because I need this. So where this idea of tomorrow, this letter is going to come back, the letter Vav is going to return and is going to be the harbinger of the future redemption, where it really comes out is in Vayikra, in a pasuk in Vayikra, in Vayikra, 26:42. Pasuk says, "V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov." Hashem says, I shall remember my covenant with Jacob. V'yafes brisi Yitzchak, and also my covenant with Yitzchak. V'yafes brisi Avram, and also with Avram. I'm going to remember. Now, look carefully at the word for Yaakov over there, page 716 in the Hebrew. 716. Zacharti es brisi Yaakov, I shall remember my covenant with Yaakov. And if you have a look, if you have the Hebrew Chumash, it says Yaakov. And what's unusual about the word Yaakov over there? How is it spelled? It's not missing a vav. As an extra vav. There's an extra vav. We normally spell the word Yaakov as Yud Ayin Kuf Beis. And here it's spelled as Yud Ayin Kuf Vav Beis. The extra vav. What's that extra vav doing over there? These vavs are popping up everywhere. So Rashi says, I shall remember my covenant with Yaakov. Rashi says, Bechamisha Makomos. There are five places, Nichta Mole, that the name Yaakov is written full with an extra vav. Uh-huh. There are five times in the Chumash that the word Yaakov has a vav in it. The Eliyahu, Elijah the prophet, is Choser. He's missing a vav five times. And as Elijah, we pronounce as Eliyahu, but sometimes you'll see it written as Elia, and sometimes there are people actually called Elia. Elia is without the vav, right? Eliyahu is with the vav. So there are five times that the vav's missing in Eliyahu, and there are five times that there's an extra vav in Yaakov. What's going on? So Rashi says, Yaakov notal os mishmo shel Eliyahu. He took a letter vav from Eliyahu's name as an eravan, as a collateral. Mm-hmm. As collateral, sheyava v'yavasa, that Elijah Eliyahu shall come in the future and bring in and announce the coming of the Geula, the redemption of his children. In other words, Elijah's role is to be the harbinger of the Messiah. He's the preamble to the coming of the Mashiach. And that's Elijah the prophet's role, to be the harbinger of the Messianic era. So Yaakov says to Eliyahu, you know, you have to guarantee this to me. You know, you got to guarantee that this is that you're going to do this. And I want collateral. I want collateral on your promise and on your commitment and your promise that you're going to bring the Geula for the Jewish, for my children. Now, even though Eliyahu hasn't yet been born yet in the time of Yaakov, Yaakov lived hundreds of years before Eliyahu. But this is more allegorical but is the deeper ideas going on. But the concept is that Yaakov is saying to Eliyahu, you have to guarantee, you have to make sure, and you have to give me collateral. And what's the collateral I want from you? Give me a vav of your name. Give me a vav from your name. Give me a vav from your name, and that's my collateral. That's your promise. I'll be a guarantee that you're going to promise, you're going to fulfill your promise of bringing the Geula to your children in the future. Give me a vav from your name. Not just one vav, I want five vavs. Five vavs, right? I want five vavs for collateral. So the Maharal says, what's the five vav? Why five vavs? Because five fingers, a handshake. He wants a handshake. Oh. Give me a handshake. Five vavs of a hand of a handshake to guarantee that you're going to fulfill your promise of bringing the final redemption. So the vav again, here's the vav. This is all the vav. The vav is a sign of redemption. That's what it is. The vav is the sign of redemption. It's a sign of geula. It's a sign of redemption. The future redemption is a sign of. So why is the vav a sign of redemption? What's the special?
I'm sorry, I'm confused. Who's talking to who?
Elijah. In that medrash, Jacob is speaking to Eliyahu and saying, "You give Elijah is the one who's going to be the harbinger of the coming of the Messiah." Okay. So therefore, he says, "Give me collateral." Yaakov says, "Give me collateral from Elijah." So the vav is that. So this vav. So what we see, what it really comes out very quite loud and clear, is the vav has a special power to it. Has a special energy to it. It symbolizes. It represents the geula. The Vav of Geula, the letter Vav. And the question is, what exactly is it about the Vav, which is symbolic or represents the Geula? So this obviously goes into the whole subject of the understanding of Hebrew letters, the alphabet, and the meaning of Hebrew letters and Hebrew words in general. But we have a principle. We do have a principle that if you want to understand anything, there's a rule. I think the Vilna Gaon says this. The rule is to go back to the very, very, very first time that particular word, letter, or idea is mentioned in Chumash. Because if the Chumash is the blueprint of creation, the Torah is the blueprint of reality, So therefore, the roots of everything is in the Chumash. So therefore, if you want to understand a ladder, a word, a concept, go back to the very, 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 very first time this idea appears in the Chumash. So if we go back to the very first time that the ladder Vav, where is the very first Vav in the Chumash? So let's take a look. It's not hard to find because all you have to do is go to the first pasuk. It's not so hard. This doesn't require a lot of page turning. So Bereishis Bara Elokim Eis Hashemayim Veis Aretz. In the beginning, Hashem created the heavens and the earth. So Vav. Now the word Vav, just on a pshat level, the letter Vav means and. The letter Vav, whenever the letter Vav is put before another word, it means and. That's such a simple translation. But here it appears that Hashem created the heavens and the earth. The heavens and the earth. Okay, so fine. Just means and. But the message is very, very powerful. If you just think about it, very, very powerful, profound concept. That the first time the letter Vav appears in the Chumash is as a connector between
heaven and earth.
Mm. Right? Isn't that, just think about that.
Yeah.
Right? The first time that the Vav, so this identifies the meaning of the Vav, right? The true identity of the Vav is the connector between heaven and earth.
Mm.
That's what the Vav is. I mean, the word Vav, when I say the word Vav, when I say Vav, it's referring to a letter. Every pronunciation of a letter is a word by definition, because an Aleph and Beis, these are words I'm saying. So Vav is a word unto itself. And Vav as a word means a hook.
Wow.
Vav in Hebrew, Vav is a hook. So it stands to reason because the Vav is connects words. But on a deeper level, really on the deeper level of the connective energy of the Vav, it's not just about connecting words together and hanging pictures on a wall. It's connecting Shemayim to Aretz. That's the first place, HaShemayim v'Aretz, the connection between heaven and earth. That's the meaning of the Vav. And if that's what the Vav is, you know, you begin to examine it on a more thorough level. There's many more examples of how that idea appears. So for example, there's just a few examples which I have written over here. So first of all, in Hashem's name, Yud-Heh and Vav-Heh, this is more Kabbalistic. There's a concept of the upper hay and the lower hay of Hashem's name in the UK Vav K name, connected by the Vav. You see this energy of connecting two different levels together, upper energies to lower energies. That's the upper Vav and the lower Vav. Also, who's created on the sixth day? I forgot to mention, the Vav also has a numerical value of six, right? Every letter has a numerical value. So who's created on the sixth day of creation? Man, what's our function? What's our identity? What's our purpose? That's man's function. Man's function is to connect Shemayim v'aretz, to connect heaven to earth, right? That's our function. We were created on the sixth day. And the sixth day itself, today, right now, is Friday. What's the identity of a Friday?
Erev Shabbos.
We've spoken about this before, about we have to be Erev Shabbos Dika Yidden. Erev Shabbos Dika Yidden is preparing the world for Shabbos. That's the identity of the Jew, to prepare the world for Shabbos. We're getting ready for Shabbos. So Avav is a connect. So the 6 days is the connector between the mundane days of the week to the Shabbos Kodesh. And another idea, which is really an interesting concept, you may have heard this, first of all, the Messianic era, we know, corresponds to the sixth millennia. This is a basic concept, that we're in the year 5786, the sixth millennia. The sixth millennia, this is brought down by many sources, that the sixth millennia of creation is really the Erev Shabbos. It's also the sixth day. It's ushering in the Shabbos of creation, the Shabbos of the world. In particular, the different dates. So for example, the specific correspondence on the secular calendar to the sixth millennia, the year 1240, would correspond, because if every day, for let me be clearer, every day of the week would correspond to a millennia. So every day of the week. So we are, we are living through 7 days of the week in the course of human history, of Jewish history. So every millennia corresponds to a day of the week. So just as in the micro process of the week, every day passes, and then we eventually get to Shabbos, the seventh day of the week. So on the macro level of the of time, we're going through six millennia, and then the seventh millennia is going to be Shabbos, the Shabbos of reality, the Shabbos of the universe, the Shabbos of creation. So therefore, each millennia corresponds to a day, so that you could map them together. So here's how it goes. So that as the stars come out, as it becomes nightfall of the sixth millennia, you have to do you have to go through the math to see this. But this is I got this already. So the year 1240 corresponds to nightfall of the sixth day. Do you understand what I'm saying, Lewis? That's 1240. What's important is this: dawn of the sixth millennia corresponds to the year 1740. It was dawn, because dawn is really the morning of Erev Shabbos is when it really begins. When you the day in the morning, we really start preparing for Shabbos at dawn in the morning. So the dawn of the sixth millennia corresponds to the year 1740. What's the year 1740 for the Kabbalah or the Hasidim among us? 1740. It's either the birth of the Baal Shem Tov was when the Baal Shem Tov really made his mark on the world, but 1740 was the beginning of the whole emergence of the Hasidic dynasties, etc. Very important dimension of the process of the coming of the redemption of the coming of the Messiah. So that's the 1740. But again, it's the sixth millennia, and again, you have also the letter Vav. Being it's a connector, a Vav also is comprised of two shapes. Right, there's the vertical part of the Vav, but the top part of the Vav over there, what letter is
like
that?
A hook.
That's a Yud. That's a Yud, and Yud symbolizes infinity. That symbolizes, so really, in the Vav itself, you have this whole picture of bringing infinity down into the physical world. That's the Vav. So this is what's happened. So that's why the Pedus, in the word Pedus, in our word over here, it's missing the Vav, because that connection from heaven and earth has not yet taken place. But it'll be in the future. It's going to be in the future. Who's going to bring it about? You and I. We're the ones who are going to bring it about. That's our role. Our role is to bring Shemayim down to Aretz, resembling and embodying the message of the Vav. That's our mission, to bring Shemayim, bring the heaven, bring Kedusha, bring holiness down into the physical world. How do we do that? Not complicated. Mitzvahs, right? Putting on tefillin, Shabbos, Kashrus, all of the mitzvahs. That's the mechanism. That's the mechanism of bringing Shemayim down to the earth. I was thinking to myself, you know, there could be two dynamics you could think about. Do we bring heaven down to earth, or do we lift earth up to heaven? Right? We're always talking about bringing heaven, and that's what the Vav is, means Shemayim. The Vav is connecting heaven to earth. So it's as though the heaven's coming down to the earth, right? Coming down to the earth. What's better? So I don't know. This is something I was... I'll tell you where I got an answer from. I got an answer from an unexpected source when I was driving this morning. So I turned on the radio. I on my daughter's car. What's it called? Series X. What is it?
Sirius XM.
Sirius XM, right? And yeah. She had so I click it on, and there's a station called Escape, right? Music, some kind of. And then it was like a little music. They were playing some music. And all of a sudden, the music ended, and then the voice comes on and says. Connect. I love it. She said, connect with beautiful music and escape. And escape. Right? And I thought, that's it. That's what happened. This is not about escaping. We don't, because if you look at it from the perspective of taking the earth and lifting up to Shemayim and elevating the earth to Shemayim, which is, you know, on the surface seems okay. But then that could lead to escaping from this world. We're not supposed to escape. We're supposed to bring. We're supposed to sublimate this physical world, bring Shemayim down into this physical world, and elevate the whole physical world without escaping from it. That's the proper approach to it. I want to read this story, a beautiful story about this famous Rebbe. His name was Reb Meir Premishlon. Reb Meir Premishlon. And he was, I'll read this, just read the story as it is over here. So the part of the river used as a mikveh for ritual immersion was situated high atop a steep hill in the outskirts of Premishla. So this is where he lived. And the mikveh was on the top of, I guess there was like a waterfall somewhere near there, and there was the, and that's where he used to go to the mikveh. When the road leading up to it was slippery, people had to take the long way round the hill to walk right to get up to the hill because the straight path up the hill was very dangerous. So that's how people used to go. Reb Meir, on the other hand, the Rebbe from Mishlon, always took the direct route up, irrespective of the state of the road, and was never known to stumble or slip. And what the conditions were, he would always take the straight road up to the mikveh in the river. Always rain or shine, no matter what the weather conditions were. But one snowy day, when the ice mountain paths were especially hazardous, Reb Meir walked uphill to the river as usual. Two guests were staying in the area, sons of the rich, who had come somewhat under the influence of the Haskalah Enlightenment movement. So they were a little bit of a naysayers and doubters and scoffers. And they were witnessing this. These two young men saw him going up, and he went to the mikveh. And they couldn't believe, and they suddenly didn't believe in supernatural achievements. And when they saw him going, striding uphill with the sure step, with his sure steps as usual, they convinced themselves and each other that the road up there was no doubt easily scaled and not in the least dangerous. So in order to prove their theory, they waited until Reb Meir had begun immersing in the river and then set out confidently themselves up the icy hillside road. After only a few steps on the treacherous trail, they slipped and tumbled down the path, requiring medical attention for their injuries. They couldn't do it. When one of the young men was fully healed, he mustered the courage to approach the tzaddik with a question. Why was it no one else could go up this slippery road while the Rebbe was able to walk with sure steps, never stumbling? Reb Meir replied, he said, if a man is connected on high, he doesn't fall down below. Right? Meir is tied up on high, and that's why he can take even a slippery hill in his stride. And this is the lesson. The more connected we are to on high, we can deal with what's down here. Right? And that's by bringing all of that down here into our lives. But we've got to be connected to begin with. Right? We first have to be connected to on high to be able to bring all this kedusha, all this holiness down into the physical world as well. But that's the vav. That's what we get from the vav over here. So may we all be zocha to merit to resemble the vav, to be connected, to be hooked, to be connected on high, and to bring all this kedusha and holiness down into our physical lives through the mitzvahs, through learning, through davening, through doing mitzvahs. You know, that's what it's all about.